Okay, I'm having real trouble with this. See right there, with this episode. I can't fucking speak today. Anyway, so I was at my beloved Co-Opportunity Market on Broadway in Santa Monica, and the Prince song Kiss was playing. And I was like, okay, cool, I'm totally into that. And some guy starts whistling. I mean, I love whistling. I'm a fucking whistler. And I love that Mickey Rourke comeback movie, The Whistler. God, that was good. Anyway, the guy was whistling, you know, fairly well to the song, a little bit out of tune. But this guy, like, whistled the whole goddamn song. And there's a lot of that song that you shouldn't be whistling to. It's unwhistleable. Is that a word? But the guy's, like, starting to whistle to, like, crazy guitar solos and all this shit. And just kind of became annoying as hell. It's like, hey, it's cool. You know, if all of us here, like, whistle a little bit now and again, just keep it fucking under control. Speaking of not keeping your voice under control, I know I've said it before, but it's a keeper. Like, whenever I see someone talking on a cell phone, like, really loud, I mean, this asshole may even have his speaker on, which in my book should be grounds for immediate execution. But anyway, I want to say to these people, sir, oh, hi, yeah, no one wants to hear your fucking conversation, okay? Talk on the phone at a normal level, dipshit. I don't know if you're just dumb or if you're like trying to make yourself look important or intriguing or whatever, but goddamn it, dude, shut the fuck up. The person talking to you on the phone probably doesn't even want to listen to your dumb ass. Have a nice day.
You are my density. You are my density.
And hey, speaking of stars, and I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but in college, my worst grade was for this astronomy class. It's like astronomy. What the fuck is that about anyway? But you know, they had a ceiling that would like turn the lights down, and then the stars and shit were projected on there, and my eyes were kind of bad. I couldn't see the stars. I just saw like all that other shit, the sky or whatever the fuck that is. So like, during finals, he would point to some bullshit up there and be like, okay, what star is this? And I'm like, I see nothing up there. So yeah, but I did learn something from the class, and I'm actually seriously indebted to this class because these two phrases have become part of the lexicon between me and a friend of mine, and they are follow the arc to Arcturus and Merrick and Doobie. I mean, the minute I heard those phrases, my brain was like, okay, guys, those are permanent. I love just randomly saying American Doobie to my friend. And you know what phrase is like fun to try and awkwardly work into daily conversations? Are you ready? You had me on hello. Sometimes I'll say that to people, and it's like, if it's like weirdly expertly timed, it can really work. It's like the best phrase because it just works in any situation. Even if it doesn't work, it works. Even if it doesn't work, it still works. Kind of sounds like some weird, awful Tina Turner B-side. Hey, did this ever happen to you? Like, you know, you've made up in your mind, like, if a person is cool or if they're an asshole. You have those, like, clear categories in your brain. Let me give you an example here. So there was this doctor at the hospital I used to work at. And, you know, I would see her and I would say hi and she wouldn't respond. Like, zero recognition. So anyway, this happened several more times. And then I was like, okay, this one is the confirmed asshole category. Let's move on. And so anyway, I was talking to a coworker, like, I don't know, a couple months later, and we were talking about the doctor. And I was like, that motherfucker doesn't say hi when I say hi. They do nothing. And that's a big thing to me. So that person sucks. And so literally later that day, this doctor and I were passing by each other. And I had long stopped acknowledging her or saying hi or any of that shit. None of those pleasantries. I give her no pleasantries. But yeah, seriously, that day, we're walking by each other, and she's like, oh, hi, Mark. And she, like, asks how I've been and all this shit. And then when I saw my friend later, I said, God damn it, I don't like when this happens. Like, I've decided the person was an asshole. Now, don't go messing with the computer chip in my brain. It's making me confused. Does that ever happen to you? No? Well, you're just stupid then. No, I'm just kidding. And hey, you know what word I really hate? Acai, A-C-A-I, I guess it's pronounced acai, but I look at it and it's like acai or acai. It's just, don't fucking put together letters like that, you fucking asshole. You acai asshole. And that phrase kind of works if you do it like in an Arnold vibe. God damn, I come up some great shit sometimes, what can I say? Anyway, Jesus, man, get to the point here. And don't you get it, though? The point is that there is no point. That's the point of the whole fucking thing. But anyway, I read a cool quote from the probable asshole corporate titan, Jack Welch. He said, change before you have to. And I was like, dude, Welch, baby, that is good. It's one of those things that's like so simple and so complex at the same time. I mean, things can happen and we don't have control over everything. But if you can look more long term and really think about it and work on it, you can create big time changes in your life. It can take a long ass time. But it's just one of those things where if you can successfully pull it off, it's just like, dude, hell yes. Like for me, it took me a long time, but I successfully orchestrated my way out of the advertising industry and into the nursing industry. And like I've said, I've always seen life as a movie. And it's like, okay, you don't like the scene you're in? Well, fucking change the script, change the scene. Okay, moving on here, and this is big. I think I found the most terrible opening credits song that I've ever heard in my life, ever. It's 1984's Alphabet City. It's a crime thriller with the airheady Vincent Spano as a young thug. It's also got that fucking Michael Winslow guy who did those sound effects for Police Academy. That was funny for like 10 seconds. And yes, he's still doing those sound effects in this movie. That's his total shtick. It's directed by Amos Poe, who recently died. Rest in peace, sir. He sounded pretty interesting. But yeah, just listen to this song when they play the credits. It is so bad. And actually, before the credits, there's like this weird montage and close-ups of Vincent Spano getting dressed, like shows his stomach and he puts his shirt on and then we see his zip up his pants. And it's like, dude, why are you showing this? I don't want to see this. What am I, out of Chippendales? Cut it. But the movie itself is watchable. It's got a completely legit time capsule vibe. But it does have, without hesitation, two or three of the worst songs I've ever heard. And I'm even including Corey Feldman's band, Corey Feldman and the Angels. It's that bad. All right, and oh my God, I can't remember if I've said this joke, but whatever. I think I have, but here we go. So we see an elderly couple in their bedroom, and the woman is in bed. The man is rummaging through the cabinets and shelves, and he says, honey, where did you put my dildo? Oh, and quickly back to Alphabet City, I forgot. There's this other scene where Vincent Spano's at a nightclub and people are dancing. It's like, okay, cool, whatever. And they proceed to like show these people dancing for what seems like 5 minutes. And there's all this break dancing that looks ridiculous. It's just, you didn't have to fill that time with that shit. You could have made the movie shorter. So I was contemplating getting a bottle of wine the other day, which of course reminded me of the classic Off Color as Hell, The Jerk, starring Steve Martin as Navin Johnson, who's a complete dipshit. And as the poster said, it's a rags to riches to rags story. But anyway, the newly wealthy Navin is at a fine dining restaurant with Bernadette Peters. And after having a bottle of wine, Steve Martin says to the waiter something like, all right, enough of this old wine. We want the freshest wine you've got, like this year's. I think I said I was going to have more of a structure to these podcasts, more like the earlier one. Well, clearly I didn't start with this episode. It's quite random. The episodes with more of a theme require more preparation, and they require more preparation H, because you're sitting on your ass writing so long. Oh my God, that joke is terrible. But yeah, I'm still really only running on half a tank here. And speaking of gasoline, the essential elixir of life, one of my favorite lines comes from Mad Max 2, a.k.a. The Road Warrior from 1981, but it was released in the United States in 1982. Aptly directed by George Miller with Mel Gibson and as our lone wolf anti-hero, Max Rockatansky, who was a cop whose family got killed, and now he just drifts along with his dog, named Dog. You know it's post-apocalyptic. You don't have a lot of time to be imaginative. But anyway, this little community of people is trying to flee, and they have a tanker full of gas, but no way to move it. And then in this shot, this like really greatly executed pan, we see Mel Gibson and he says, 2 days ago, I saw a vehicle that would haul that tanker. You want to get out of here? You talk to me. I mean, I love that. You talk to me. And it's just like undiluted organic Mel Gibson charisma. Now, of course, Mel Gibson is a complete nutcase. And you know the real reason I hold the door open for people? It's not because I'm being respectful. It's really to discover the people that don't say thank you and put them on my permanent fuck you list. And of course, I always say, you're welcome, fairly loudly when that happens, to shake the people out of their fucking cocoon and be like, hey, I don't need to hold the door open for you. I'm being decent. You return the favor, you fucking idiot. And yes, I know I told that exact goddamn story on one of these episodes. Hey, didn't I say something about structure earlier? I read this interesting quote from J.E. Gordon, I guess a legendary biomechanical engineer, who said, when you climb the tower of a cathedral, it becomes shorter as a result of your added weight. By a very, very tiny amount, but it really does become shorter. That's just one of those cool, mind-blowing quotes where you're just like, whoa, man. Let's see, what stuff have I been watching? Well, I watched The Stuff, the 1985 horror sci-fi, directed by the kind of awesome Larry Cohen, starring Michael Moriarty, Paul Sorvino, and Garrett Morris as a famous Amos-type character. So Moriarty is a shadowy investigator who's trying to uncover the possibly deadly secret of a mysterious, sweet, addictive, yogurt-looking treat called The Stuff. Dude, this movie is totally entertaining. It's silly. There's some moments where you're like, what in the hell is going on here anyway? And there is possibly the goofiest cameo I've ever seen in a film. It's this little short scene with Abe Vigoda. Yes, Abe Vigoda, who played the character Tessio in the 1972 film The Godfather. Tessio legendarily betrayed the Corleone family. And Tessio has two absolutely rock-solid legendary quotes from The Godfather. Number one, Tom, can you get me off the hook for old time's sake? As he's pleading to Tom Hagen, the Corleone consigliere, played by Robert Duvall. And quote number two, of course, just the immortal line as Abe Vigoda realizes his fate is sealed and he's about to be killed. He says, tell Mike it was only business. I always liked him. In which Vigoda is sending a last message to Michael Corleone, played by Al Pacino. But anyway, the cameo in The Stuff has Abe Vigoda and, oh my Jesus Christ, Clara Peller. Yes, that Where's the Beef lady from the iconic 1984 Wendy's TV commercial. And yes, you guessed it, in this film she says, where's the stuff? And we must discuss the Canadian actor Michael Moriarty. He's always freaked me out. He has the strangest, like, line delivery ever. Like, the timing and his voice, it makes me uneasy as shit. And I can't tell if he's, like, the worst actor ever or, like, the best. But of course, he's dear to my heart because of his role in the often-mentioned 1973 film Bang the Drum Slowly with Michael Moriarty as a star professional baseball pitcher and Robert De Niro as kind of a third-rate catcher who's stricken with a fatal disease. It's kind of like a baseball version of the 1970 ABC movie of the week's Brian Song with James Caan as a professional football player who gets an aggressive form of cancer. Billy Dee Williams, who will be mentioned in a moment, plays his teammate and friend, Gale Sayers. The movie is based on the real-life story of Chicago Bears running back Brian Piccolo, who died at age 26 from a lethal, rapidly growing cancer. Brian Piccolo is buried in St. Mary's Catholic Cemetery in Evergreen Park, Illinois. His gravestone has the image of a football, and above his name says Father. And I like that. No matter what your profession, how successful or unsuccessful you are, if you have a kid, then that's your number one job, is to be a good father. That's it, man. I mean, go for it. Be successful. Be a superstar. But in the end, being good to your family is all that matters. Now, when I watched Osgood Perkins' latest, 2025's Keeper, which was not a keeper for me, I mean, it's got style to burn, but it just seems like not enough material for a feature. It's more of a short film. I mean, there's no denying Tatiana Maslany is a great actress. I mean, she is great in this movie. But this lead actor, Rossif Sutherland, is a complete fucking turkey. Dude has zero charisma, kind of looks weird, and he's just wooden. And yes, he's one of the sons of Donald Sutherland, another actor that creeped me out since I was young. So yeah, Tatiana is an artist, and she's seeing this guy, and they go to a secluded cabin, and then we see, like, the same stories kind of repeated from different, like, perspectives or something. And I was fairly baked when I was watching this, so take that into account. but I mean the first half is appropriately tense. And there's zero doubt that Osgood Perkins can direct. I mean, he knows how to stage a scene, and he really knows how to create tension. But the story is just kind of blah. I mean, I enjoyed Long Legs, and I really liked The Monkey, but Keeper was kind of a dud. I mean, again, obviously, if you enjoy horror, yes, of course, see it. But it was one and done for me. And, of course, Osgood Perkins, as mentioned before, is the son of actor Anthony Perkins. Yes, Norman Bates himself. And Anthony Perkins played a hotshot photographer in the strange, kind of cringy film Mahogany from 1975, directed by, holy trivia alert, the massive record executive and founder of the Motown record label, Berry Gordy. Dude is still alive. He's 96. And if Berry Gordy dies within a week or two of me doing this podcast, then I have satanic powers. But yeah, in Mahogany, Diana Ross is a wannabe fashion designer in Rome who becomes a fashion model after running into Anthony Perkins. Oh yeah, Billy Dee Williams is also in there as a social activist. The movie is very soap opera-ish, not my vibe. And to be honest, Anthony Perkins was just, he's always weird. It's like built in. But yeah, his son Osgood Perkins has the goods. And I look forward to his future endeavors. And Osgood Perkins is such a fun name to say. Like, imagine Johnny Carson saying, okay, so Ed, yeah, next up we've got Osgood Perkins. Osgood Perkins, have you heard of him, Ed? And Ed says, oh, yes, sir. I loved The Long Legs. In closing, while Mahogany the movie is kind of weird, the theme for Mahogany, sung by Diana Ross, is incredible. It's also on her 1975 album named Mahogany. I mean, this song has just got one of the greatest verses ever. It's just perfect. And I mean, really, do any of us know where we are going to?
Do you know where you're going to? Do you like the things that life is showing you? Where are you going to? Do you know?